Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right. My right forearm is twitching.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. I exercised today. I think I, you know,
You
my
put
muscles are protesting.
not to shame you, because I'm going to encourage positive things. What constitutes exercise in this hypothetical scenario?
I wish there was a way to describe it. I don't know. It's just a variety of exercises for strengthening one's core and back, as I have a bad back. So it's just, you know, a handful of things. You could call it physical therapy type related things, because that's where I learned most of them, slash the internet, but you know, just exercise stuff. I don't think there's really a name for it. Like, I wasn't running, I was doing exercises.
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 This is, I don't know why you're obfuscating so much, but okay.
You want me to like go down the list of all of the exercises I did?
Well, I mean, just like name a couple. Like, what was the predominant exercise?
Push-ups, sit-ups, planking, those other weird ones where you stick your arms and legs out in weird fashion, stuff like that. I don't know.
Okay.
Borderline yoga-esque type exercises.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know what to call it. I keep forgetting to start my yoga exercise on my Apple Watch, which is apparently a thing now.
Huh. Okay. Well,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't think I've used that one.
I used it once.
One frustrating thing is when they first rolled out the Apple Watch update that was supposed to automatically track the stuff you were doing.
Yeah.
And it initially was working great. It's like, it looks like you're doing a walk. And I'm like, yes, I am. Thank you. You're recording this, so that way it'll count for later. But then somehow, for some reason, it seems to have not grabbed for that status as often. So this past week when I was on vacation in Mexico City and I'm doing a lot of walking around, needless to say, we did not get a rental car for this. We're doing a lot of walking around, and I'd forget to turn on the little walkie thing. But I'm gonna get my points. They don't mean anything. They don't count for anything. But I want to fill the little circle-y thing, and I want it to tell me I did a good job and I was a good boy. I just need this positive reinforcement
You
from.
want your wrist cookie.
Yeah, I want my wrist cookie. Give me my stars. I'm a millennial. Reward me. But the thingy wasn't kicking in, and so I'd have to manually do it every single time. And there was one time I was even walking, and it's like, it looks like you stopped. And I'm like, no, I like paused at that light back there, and then I started walking again. I've been walking for like a minute. Like, I didn't stop.
Mine has never suggested to me to start an exercise. It frequently suggests to stop, like when I get home, because I turn it on every time I take the dog for a walk. But it has never once suggested, "Hey, you're walking now. Do you want to start a workout or whatever?"
Yeah.
Yeah. But
I
I
don't know.
started. I do it with the. I have my Lift to Siri. Is that what it's called? Where you don't have to push the button or say the word or whatever.
Yeah, lift
So
the
I
Siri,
just,
push the pizza.
yeah, lift the Siri, push the pizza. So I lift my Siri and I push the pizza and I say, start an outdoor walk workout. And then it just says, okay. Although
Oh.
sometimes it says okay, sometimes it just haptics me and then just goes about its business. But yeah, it usually starts just fine.
I have an important live on-air correction. It is
Oh, do you?
Push for Pizza was the name of the company that no longer exists.
Yeah, what did you say?
I said Push to Pizza, which
Oh,
is,
it doesn't matter. They're
yeah.
defunct anyway.
I know, but I just want to make sure that everyone is happy when they're listening and they're not upset that I said the wrong thing. But they're probably gonna be
Didn't
upset
they
anyway.
do a marketing thing where they bought a like a one of those vehicle wraps for like a rented Lamborghini that said "Push for Pizza"? Do you
They
remember that?
very well could have. I don't remember it. The most significant thing I remember about their marketing campaign was their commercial that they did with a certain company that is known for
For things that are not pizza but are food related.
yes.
Push for
Yes.
pizza
One
car.
might even say if you f were to fold a pizza in half to kind of make a sandwich, if you would. that kind of a company. But
yeah, here it is. They appear to have rented a Lamborghini of some sort, and they wrapped it to make it look like pizza with their logo on the it's not the hood, it's the trunk on the front.
That's interesting. Did you know that in Skype, if you send somebody a link and they don't have the chat open, it just shows you the entire URL in center spaced justified text with an underline under it, and you can't tap on it to do anything?
But I then didn't if know I, that. That's very helpful.
But then if I push
I'm closing mine, send me a link.
Okay.
Don't make it anything horrifying.
No, nothing horrifying. I'm only gonna send you the best, most wholesome stuff.
It's gonna be horrible, isn't it?
No. I'm not that kind of a person.
In my haste to get here, I'm not clicking on that.
Anyway,
I like that it came up over your face.
Wait,
now that I opened the chat back up, I see the expanded title of this page.
I don't know why I expanded to that. We'll not elaborate on my decision any further. I don't even want to know. Do you want to close the thing again so we can try it with something wholesome and pure this time?
I saw the URL. It came up over your little face and then it went away.
Yeah, and so you can't click on it. Even if you wanted to click on that one, don't do that. But take my word for it. You can't click on the URL. But then if you open the chat, it shows you the image preview. So it's like, well, if you're going to show me an image preview, why don't you just do that instead of center-spaced URL text over your quantized gradient?
Well, this is a very new application. I mean, maybe they'll get it in version 2.0.
Oh, my God. I hate Skype so much.
Hang on a second. I'm being told that this is Skype 8.41.0.54.
Yes, yes. And it
I have a new update available. Maybe in that one it'll show you an image preview when you have your chat closed.
No, in fact, I downloaded that right before we started and updated my call recorder and did all that business because I wanted to make sure that nothing was out of sync or out of date because I had heard from Don Melton that there was a version of Skype that broke call recorder. I just wanted to make sure everything was compatible and synced up correctly, and it is. So that's all I need.
Whatever, all you call recorder people.
I like call recorder. You know why?
Because it automatically records things.
Yes. You know why that's a good thing?
Because you don't have to hit the record button.
Because I will literally forget to push the record button. I've done it on several occasions. Usually when I am a guest on an incomparable episode that Jason Snell is recording, he did one with the Google Groups that I was in, and then another one with Zoom. I don't know if you had the pleasure of using Zoom yet, but it is a very Web 2.0 looking thing, even though it's using current web technologies to do WebRTC. I just mean design wise, it looks like butt. It is a weird web application for doing the audio recording stuff. But it provides him with separate channels, so he likes that, because if you have six people on a podcast, then you can compensate for any audio issues more easily than what you can do with Skype, where you would just have one backup audio track. In that scenario, I have also forgotten to hit record because there's no call recorder, and I will do that from time to time. Another fantastic thing about call recorder is that it has little meters and everything in it, and so I can look at the little meters and they're going and they're doing their thing.
They all have meters.
Yeah,
and QuickTime has meters, Audio Hijack has meters, they all got meters.
And there's a button that I can push to drop a marker if something were to happen. Like if I were to say a bad word, or you were to say a bad word, or a fire truck goes by, or there's a connection issue, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so on and so forth. It's all good stuff. I appreciate the product. I
don't know if I have markers in these other thingies here. I've never actually looked.
Markers are good.
Yeah, I got a big button that'll split my file while we're talking.
Wow.
If I wanted to do that.
That seems dangerous. Don't push the button.
Well, you push the button and then it just starts another MP3.
Yeah. Push for MP3.
Push for split. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Make like a diopter and split.
Uh, Never mind. I'm not going to get into that. I mean, I get it or whatever, but like, I don't understand the fascination.
I mean, not to yuck on somebody's yum, but I believe that Todd Vaziri, the internet's Todd Vaziri, ILM's Todd Vaziri, Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Todd Vaziri. He has a fascination. He's got a thing he likes, and I'm happy for him. Right. It's not something that specifically speaks to me. For instance, I love match cuts, but who loves match cuts? It seems like a weird thing to obsess about. And I'm not going to go harvest things from my DVDs and then post like my favorite match cuts of all time or something.
Or like your like, you know, shift tilt lens alert or whatever. I don't know. Like it's like, hey, look, there's a red car in this frame, and I like red cars or something. I don't know.
Well, you could do that. That's fine. Everybody's allowed to have a hobby.
Sure, everyone's allowed to have a hobby.
But one thing that I definitely 100 million% know is that if you ever want to see a split diopter shot, watch a Robert Wise movie, and then you're going to see a whole bunch of them. There are just everywhere. Andromeda Strain. Star Trek the Motion Picture, et cetera, so on and so forth. He just loves split diopters. No idea why.
I haven't seen... You're talking about Andromeda Strain from like the 70s?
Yeah.
I feel like there are a couple versions of it, like of varying quality.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the old one, and I haven't seen any other version.
Yeah, I think I read the book too. But yeah, the movie was... peculiar.
I think it was a made for TV movie was the more recent one. I don't even think it was like a real thing, and it had like Will from Will and Grace in it. What's his face?
2 hours and 11 minutes. How did he even find the split diopters on that one? Wouldn't that get filtered out in his remove all movies over 2 hours filter?
Fortunately, Vashi Nomad. I can't remember his last name.
2008, starring Benjamin Bratt.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, there is like a lot of split diopters in these movies. But
Eric Cormack.
I like the occasional split diopter, you know, and then you Jaws.
Well, it's one of those things I don't. Is it really like a look at us doing fancy cinematography thing, or is it more of like a, well, we can't get the shot we need, so we need to punt it into Plan B, and I guess we could use a split diopter. Like, is it like an artistic choice to really like go there and use fancy tech, or are they using it because they're stuck?
Well, here's the thing: I am of two opinions on this. It depends entirely on the execution, because Robert Wise's stuff seems to mainly be, hey, look at this fancy shit I'm doing. Recently we did The Shadow, and I commented that there were a couple split diopter shots in there. And it was always when there's supposed to be something bizarre or surreal or unnatural happening. Of course, they're on a stage set where there's like a translight of the rest of the bridge that they didn't build. But that was a scenario where they're hearing the voice of the shadow for the first time. They don't know what's real and what's not, and you're getting the reaction of the guy and the guys in the background at the same time. And so that's fine. Like, I get that. It's not like it was just a random shot. In a lot of Robert Wise's stuff, it'll just be like, here are just two people having dialogue across a room, but they're both in focus. And it's like, what was the point? And in The Shadow, again, there was a scene like that where she's like sitting on the couch talking to Ian McKellen, and Ian McKellen is, it's like, why do we need to see them both together in this shot? It doesn't matter. There's nothing like otherworldly occurring. But it just depends on the use case. Sometimes I think people just get a little caught up in it. Just like how when people are doing stuff with moving cameras and it's just like, hey, knock it off. Cause you're not, you know, directing a roller coaster ride. Like we're watching the movie, so we were just paying attention to the camera movement now. That's my thing. It's like, just don't make it like overtly, obviously about the technique that you're doing. Make the technique part of the storytelling is what I like.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, for something like shift-tilt lenses, which you could also use in a similar fashion to a split diopters, you could, like, rotate the focal plane such that a person is in focus in a foreground and then a person is in focus on the other side of the frame slightly further away. But that's not typically how people use shift-tilt lenses. They mostly use it for silly artistic creative purposes or to adjust, like, keystoning on buildings and stuff if you're a architecture photographer or something. But, like, the split diopter is, you know, it's one trick pony. It's like, whatever.
I mean, it's good for flattening the space and for getting two pieces of information at the same time. I would use it in a scenario, like I had said, where things are supposed to seem unrealistic or unreal, or in a scenario where there's a long shot and the audience can choose what they're focusing on, because your eye can shift across the frame.
Yeah, but you,
go
you
back
can
and
do
forth.
That with a shift tilt shift lens, but not have a giant seam down the middle of it too.
Yeah, well, but that it's the same sort of effect if you were keeping them both in focus for that.
Yeah,
you just get that soft line that occurs.
Yeah, you don't get that with the other lens though.
Don't you?
No, you just get weird stuff happening on the edges of the frame.
Well, you still get something weird happening, but
weird things happen, but there's no line down the middle. Anyway, I guess, I don't know. I think of split diopters, there has never been an instance where I've gone like, oh, you know what would be really cool right here is a split diopter.
I very much want you to direct a commercial.
With a split diopter?
Where he uses a split diopter shot. But
you should have to sit through the hours of meetings of me trying to convince the client why that's an okay thing to do.
Well, you don't tell them. You just surprise them later. They won't even notice.
Yeah, I surprise them with the rough cut where they go, why is there this weird line down the middle? This looks horrible. It's creative. It's artistic. It has a long cinematic lineage.
Well, what you'd ideally do is have the light fall off in that region, so that way you're not getting like weird highlights or something that are going out and back in.
Oh, so then my client feedback is just, why does this look weird?
I mean, I don't know, Dan. They're going to say that anyway. I don't know what you're afraid of.
Yeah,
you can shoot the most. You can shoot
the most
normal.
I'll find my clients.
You can shoot the most normal, flat, boring thing in the world, and your clients are still going to give you notes. So I don't know what you're optimizing for here. Just have a little fun.
Just have a little fun with it. Yeah, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, there was a. I don't know if you watch the show the Patriot or Amazon's Patriot or whatever it's called, AKA Sad Spies. If you are a person who listens to the TVTM podcast on this network, they use this Lens Baby whatever
Lens Baby I've used a Lens Baby
you get the blurry weird all kinds of fun stuff and that can be useful for. If you're trying to do something from the point of view of a character who's affected by a thing.
Well, Lens Baby's great too, because it's basically just like a piece of corrugated plastic with a piece of glass on the end. So you just kind of like grab it and wiggle it around. It's very weird.
Yeah. And that's just another technique that you use for a reason for storytelling. Like if somebody just used that like for the movie, just for random shots, you'd be like, are you nuts? And that's how I kind of feel about split diopter stuff if it's just like thrown in there for no particular reason.
Actually, one of my favorite shots from any of the things that I've helped shoot or produce was a Lens Baby shot from a music video where it was looking down the neck of a guitar and you pulled the Lens Baby in tight so that the hand is focused, and then like as his hands moved, you like let it go so it springs back out to full length and basically just like a really fast kind of weird rack focus down to the other hand. It's very cool.
So how do you feel about dolly zooms or zollies, as some people call them?
Another thing that has never occurred to me to use. It's just I don't know. I feel like they stick out nowadays, and they're just like, look at me doing a fancy thing, and it's kind of hard to like pay attention to what's happening when people do that.
I think for me, it feels cliche in modern films, but if I were to go back to something in like the 60s, 70s, 80s, and I see a dolly zoom, then I'm fine with it. Like if you watch Poltergeist and it's the whole running down the hallway that keeps getting longer thing, like that's that's perfectly suitable for that.
Or these days, I think most people, well, the people who do it well these days do it incredibly slowly to the point that you almost can't even tell that it's happening. I feel like I saw this not too long ago where somebody was like on a phone call or something, and there was one that was like absurdly slow. Like it took a minute to do. And that was okay, I guess. But yeah, it does feel very, look at me being referential or something.
Yeah, it's like, we get it. You like Alfred Hitchcock. You like Steven Spielberg. Blah, 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 blah.
Also, nobody does them perfectly smoothly. Like, there's always a timing where, like, the focus puller is, like, slower and then faster at part of it, or the dolly guy slows down and speeds up. And, like, you can stabilize the subject in post or whatever, but you still get a little bit of weird non-smoothness in the background. So, unless you're doing it, like, with a technocrane or something.
Or computers.
Well, yeah, the computers run the technocrane.
No, I mean...
Oh, you mean like a fully CG virtual thing?
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, why not?
Nobody likes CG movies.
CG's ruining movies. It's just another technique. A technique in the tool belt. Is there a kind of shot? Is there a thing? Is there like a little bit of flair that you're itching to like work into something?
No. For a long time there was a particular like almost like a forced perspective gag that I wrote into a bunch of different scripts and ended up cutting out because it was just stupid, and I finally got to shoot it in one of the things that I did, and I was like, wow, I don't know why I was so obsessed with doing that, but I did it and there it is. And okay,
but you got out of your system, that's good.
I did, yeah. Yeah.
It's all about scratching that creative itch.
I swear to God, like, yeah. Nobody even noticed that I did it either. It's in the 1Password video.
That's what I'm telling you, Dan. Just put the split diopter in. Nobody's going to
know.
I don't want to
split diopter. No, nobody noticed it, which means, like, the whole point of the wink and the nod of the trick doesn't actually do anything. It's just like...
It's subliminal.
It's subliminal, yeah, of course.
Yeah. The whole point is that you're not supposed to notice. It's like
no, the whole point was that you were supposed to notice, in my instance.
Oh, wait, you wanted acknowledgement for doing the trick?
It's like a Lebowski thing, like you watch it the 40th time and you go like, oh, look at that, when he picked the phone up, the thing behind the phone disappeared, and now it's in the phone, and it's not on the wall anymore. So not on first viewing necessarily, but eventually, yeah.
You were comparing your 1Password commercial to the Big Lebowski?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of those things that rewards. It rewards additional viewings. is what I'm saying. While also learning about password safety.
It's not just for passwords.
It's not just for passwords.
Additional
it's for,
viewings.
it's for quirky camera tricks too.
Oh man. Did Adam notice?
Yeah, he noticed because I was making him do something very weird. And he's like, why am I walking this close to the camera and holding my hand right here? Like, well, I'm going to do a thing behind you. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
This is not exactly how the conversation went, but who remembers? It was so long ago.
Yeah. The halcyon days of 1Password commercials. But
the halcyon days of when I used to make commercials.
Well, I mean, do you still make commercials?
Debatable.
Work on commercials?
Sometimes.
Okay. You do stuff.
I do stuff.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff I do these days is not public, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. Well, just takes one leaky AWS account and then it will be.
And then the world is mine. Somebody's going to be like, whoa, look at this video. Who made this?
Yeah. No, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Take chances when you can take them. Don't be so jaded and defeatist.
I'll be whatever I want to be. How dare you?
Fine. Stagnate. I don't care.
Oh, boy.
Use a split diopter shot, you coward. But
I have never seen a split diopter listed on the page of things that I can rent from a rental house either.
Well, I don't know. I don't
even know where I would get one. Do they even make those anymore?
I'm sure you know a guy. Knows a guy.
I mean, shift tilt lenses are all over the damn place because you can get stills lens versions of them, and the Canon ones are, or not the Canon, the Nikon ones are actually really cool.
Okay. Well, do that. Do something. Jesus.
Just do some. Yes, I'm just literally do something. I'm going to my rental company here. Lenses, split diopter. I have a broken link here. This item is no longer in our catalog. Okay, great.
It's very popular.
Yeah. So what's new with you?
Nothing. I'm just going to refresh my beverage for a second and then just comment on being back in the United States. I was abroad, as I alluded to earlier.
What's your beverage you got there?
Oh, mezcal.
Is this your raw chicken mezcal?
No. not to get it. We'll save that for the end of the story. But this is just a Espadine, whatever. The boring mezcal, basically. Not the super smoky kind that they usually put in cocktails, where you're like, wow, you can really taste the forest fire in here. But this is the milder stuff. From Oaxaca. Mezcal apparently is very popular in Mexico City. And tequila is not. But we flew last week into Mexico City on Delta, and then did the 45-minute drive to go like a couple miles to get to the hotel. It turns out that Mexico City is just a sprawling, enormous complex of buildings that spread out in every direction and roads crisscross all over the place. So I'd never had really a sense of direction or my bearings the entire time I was there because nothing was really like grid laid out or anything.
Did you have enhanced maps to help you get to places?
No, they don't have enhanced maps yet.
That's a shame.
I had just regular maps. That was fine. But we got there, put all our stuff in the hotel, walked around, did stuff, went to dinner. We experienced the neighborhood of Roma Norte, which is the northern Roma area, and then there's Roma Sur, which is the southern Roma area, the Condesa, which is another neighborhood, and we stayed in Juarez, which is another neighborhood, and that sounds like they're all really far apart, but they're very close. And they're dramatically different from one another as you walk between them. So it was an experience, because you're in, one area and then you walk over and then all of a sudden it's like Art Deco buildings and like tree lined streets, with, like a central sidewalk down the middle. And then your left and right lanes on either side of the sidewalk.
That sounds unsafe.
Man, it is crazy the driving that occurs. I couldn't believe it. There was a one-way street where people were just fed up waiting to go up the direction they were going, so they just turned and went on the one-way street to cut across. And I was just like, wow, it's bold, because it was the wrong direction. And they got honked at, but that was about it. But the entire thing was incredibly different from the experience that you have in the United States. I would say it's very comparable to Rome in terms of the driving and the gasoline and diesel smells. I'm sure you're familiar with your experience in Rome. the crazy driving.
Gasoline?
Yeah, the crazy driving and the exhaust.
the driving is it's not really typically advisable for Americans to drive there.
No, we did not drive. We went to the Freedom Museum over in Coyoacan, which is a delightful neighborhood. That was basically like the suburbs that like took a day to get to back in the day, before, you know, the lake was filled in with stuff, dried up and filled in with houses. It's a really fascinating and completely different experience. And there's like an enormous park that's like Central Park, and there's all these other little tiny parks all over the place, and they're all very nice and manicured and looks good. but then you like turn a corner, and then all of a sudden it's like rundown buildings and body shops and just like gaping holes, and the sidewalks are just destroyed. And you're just like, what is going on? Like it would just be beautiful one second, and then like the next you're just like, wow, this is really uneven and strange. but the food was all very good. And we went to all the fancy places. We went to Pujol, which is the... Why'd you laugh?
Where?
P-U-J-O-L.
Yeah, like the baseball player.
Uh-huh. Like the baseball player.
He's plural.
Okay. Pujols?
Pujols.
Okay.
Albert Pujols?
Are you making this up?
No, I'm not making it up.
Okay.
So, where's Rye? Ask Rye.
Okay, fine. But yeah, that was... it's the place that's famous and all the stuff, and they got the chef's table on Netflix thing about it I'd seen years ago. So you do the tasting menu, and it's all very, very, very fancy high-end stuff.
Lots of tiny plates of weird, colorful things.
Yeah, and the fancier the place was, the more white Americans you were going to see there. So
was the language barrier difficult?
It depended, because if you go to the fancy places, they're used
to... Well, of course not there, I'm
sure. They're used to all of the Americans, basically. You go to, I would say, middle tier or lower-ish tier stuff, and you're not as likely to find people speaking English. But we were pretty okay with ordering in kind of our... broken way. Jason has a better grasp of Spanish than I do. Like he does with most languages, but
uno taco por favor.
No, it was just like I could do like a couple things. There were just some instances. It mainly has to do with I can decipher written Spanish okay, because I took a couple years of French, and there are just some things about sentence construction that I can figure out and, you know, intuit from letters. Sure, some vowels are in different spots or whatever, but I could work through it. But when it comes to like talking to a waiter, then I'm screwed because I can't carry the conversation at the speed and with the accent that is needed because I also don't enunciate the words correctly. It's a very similar problem that I had when I was in Austria, because I don't know any German, and the couple of German words that I do know, I can't say correctly. So that's a problem. But over there, everyone expected me to speak German because I look Germanic-ish. And
you're a Rosenstiel.
Yes, yes. Which means a rose stem. But over here, and... in North America, when I went to Mexico, they knew exactly what they were dealing with when they would see me. They should be like, "Here's just another
awkward white guy who doesn't speak Spanish."
Yeah, another
jerk. There's a speed to Spanish that is very difficult to follow, and it doesn't have the same like Italian has a typically has an emphasis, like a well, you know, the Italians are very passionate speakers, that sort of gives you sort of subtle hints as to which words to focus on, whereas Spanish is a little bit more even across the sentence, and you're just kind of like, well, that was a lot of vowels and syllables that you just said there, and trying to discern what those were.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a couple things that I could muddle through, so it was fine. It was just mainly I would just break down in fear over screwing up badly. But,
did you fire up any of the cool translator apps?
No, I was too afraid to do that because I thought that would somehow make the situation worse. But
well, you got to play it cool. You can't be like awkward, like, let me open my app real quick. I'm sorry.
No.
You just got to have it ready there. You just got to say the thing into the thing and then just show them the words.
No, but there was one weird situation where we had a waitress that seemed to, I would say it was kind of like an experience I've had in France, where there seemed to be a waitress who understood us, but
interest in speaking English to you,
which I'm fine with. Like, there's no obligation for her to do that. It seems suspicious that she seemed to understand us whenever we would like not be able to muddle our way through a particular thing, but at the same time, there was no attempt at any English, which was fine.
Not meeting you halfway is what you're saying.
Yeah, which is fine. It's just fine. I that's not a judgment on her. I mean, it's still tipped her 20%, which apparently is a lot. I did not know this at the time, but apparently it's customary to tip like 10%, but it varied everywhere you went. The places where they didn't seem to get a lot of tourists didn't seem to expect as generous of a tip. And the places where they did get a lot of tourists expected very generous tips. But that was interesting.
There are a lot of factors that influence why I tip a certain way, and the local custom is rarely the reason I choose to do those things. It's usually like, I'm sorry that I brought this really obnoxious person into your store. Like, here's a little bit extra money. Thank you for your service, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I feel bad for inconveniencing any service worker with myself. And I know that's their job.
Well, that's why you got to play it cool.
Yeah, yeah, but that's why I'm a big tipper. I've always been a big tipper. When I worked at a grocery store, we didn't get tips, except sometimes we would take people's stuff out to the car for them, the little old ladies and stuff, and they would try to tip you, and we were instructed to always turn it down, and so we would. But then
who's trying to tip you where? What? Sorry.
Oh, when you were a bagger at the grocery store, and you had to take the little old lady's bags to the car and put them in the car. Sometimes the little old lady would be very insistent that she was going to tip you 25 cents, and you'd be like, no, ma'am, I'm not allowed to take tips. And then she would insist, and then so you'd be like, fine, it's just 25 cents. I'm not going to get in trouble, but okay.
How often do they just like stick the quarter in your pocket for you?
No, that did not happen.
You're clearly not denying it emphatically enough.
No, this is not a gay strip club where people are just dropping a single quarter at a G-string.
No, but old ladies who are insistent about money will either shove it in your hand or just stick it in your pocket.
Yeah, no, but they were definitely insistent, I've always been a pretty big tipper. A situation that I have a couple of arguments about with Jason sometimes, because we'll go to like a Chinese food restaurant, and because his family's Chinese, there's a certain methodology in a lower tip that occurs there. And I'm like, but that doesn't make any sense. Like, it's just a restaurant in LA, like any other restaurant. And we've had a couple arguments about that, but,
It's not about them. It's about you, is really what it is.
Right. And then sometimes, I always tip in a coffee shop, when I'm getting coffee, and he's like, well, if you're just getting a coffee to go, they're not doing anything. I'm like, well, they are. They're making the coffee. And he's like,
boy.
Yeah. Anyway, it's an argument.
No, I got a thing about coffee shops though, because most of them run on Square nowadays, and a lot of them, they'll have a tip jar too for, you know, old people, but you know, they're running Square things there, and they just won't spin the thing around to let me tip. And I'm just like, I'm standing there, I'm like, let me do the thing. And then you just see them skip right past, and they go like, all right, thank you, your order is ready. And I'm just standing there still, and they're done. And the line behind me is like, why are you still standing there? I'm like, you're supposed to turn it around so I can give you money, cause I don't carry cash, cause I'm not old.
Yeah. Well, I don't usually have that happen. I've had a couple of instances where they'll forget to spin it around. Or they'll be busy and they'll just go on to the next person.
It happens all the time. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. But I tip in that scenario, and, the least I will tip is a dollar. Even if it's, you know, like a $3 coffee.
Do people tip less than a dollar?
Oh my God. Are you kidding me? Like,
is that a thing?
Yeah. Cause if you're using the interface thing, and it's like, do you want to tip 10, 15, or 20% is what it'll say on there. And because you ordered something that's three something, then if you tap the percentage button, you're going to wind up with something that's going to be under a dollar, because your drink is under five.
And you type in a number and you're like, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm always a generous tipper. I mean, some places will also have it programmed to show in distinct dollar amounts because they know better, but not every place does that. But in any event, in Mexico City, you also have the like in Europe, you have the little Visa machines at the table, where they walk up and they have the credit card thing that they do, and it prints out and they sign it. Only they're very used to the signature process. So it's not like Europe where they're just like, oh my God, it printed something. What do I do? which is always hilarious to me, because then you got to worry about like, how long is it going to take them to find a pen? Because they just don't seem to have them ever.
Don't most of those things take Apple Pay now?
No, not the ones that we saw. But we didn't have any problem with it. And it, we didn't run into the situations where it's like, do you want to build this in pesos or build this in dollars? It was always do it in pesos, always do it in the local currency with a credit card that doesn't have any international transaction fees. And then it's much better. Never select pay in dollars. So we would do all that business, and it would have like sometimes they would have like entered the amount you want to tip, and sometimes they would have entered the percent you wanted to tip, and sometimes they would have pre-programmed percentages. And one place they had 1, 2, or 4% tip. And I thought that was the strangest thing I'd ever seen, because I was like, is there something wrong with this? Because like, why would you tip someone 1% of your meal at a restaurant? But that was the only instance where we saw that. It was far more common to see like enter the amount. And so then we'd have to do the math on, you know, whatever, 550 pesos, to get the 20%. That was also pretty jarring to see how few dollars translate into a lot of pesos. Because you'd see the thing and you'd just have like initial sticker shock, because you'd be like, oh my God, I don't know if I can afford this. And then you'd be like, oh, that's like $10. So yes. And so we had a number of economical meals that were very nice for what they were.
Did you buy any tacos from people pushing carts?
We did, because we went on a taco tour the last night that we were there. I was not feeling well. I'm still not feeling great. But I was not feeling well at the time, because I seemed to have developed some sort of cold that was in my... basically, it was like my throat felt raw, but like everything else was okay. Mm. It was very strange. But I assumed it was
just adjusting to the local bacteria.
Well, either the local bacteria or also the air in Mexico City is incredibly dry.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're...
Well, I mean, welcome to Arizona.
they're at an elevation that's higher than Denver.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's also in a valley. So not only is it really high up there and dry and near the equator, so it's sort of like warm, but not that warm because you're so high up. But also on top of that, you're in a valley, so sometimes you don't get any breeze, and it traps all of the exhaust in it. So I looked at the air quality index, and it was in the yellow 90 to 100-ish range most of the time we were there. So I don't know if it was like a combination of dryness and irritants from particulate or whatever, because that's basically what we would get in some of the remnants of like forest fires that we were having in Los Angeles, because usually it's like 60-ish in Los Angeles, to give you an idea of like air pollution relative. And it made the sunsets beautiful, though. But but for some, whatever reason, I was not feeling great. But we went on the taco tour. Jason had already booked it. It was a lady who basically takes you around from taco stand to taco stand, and tells you what to order. Well, not she didn't even tell you what to order. She orders it on your behalf.
Wow.
And you just get the thing and you have the taco. And she's like, you're under no obligation to, you know, finish this. You know, nobody's gonna think less of you. They know you're on a tour trying a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, well, I just, you know, I was raised by parents who, like, you know, you gotta finish everything. So I just like felt bad in general if I couldn't finish something. But there were a couple instances where we started and we went to this place called Taqueria El Greco, which I know you're familiar with, Al Pastor, which was basically like pork shawarma with pineapple. And that's...
See, but I don't like it with the pineapple.
I love it with the pineapple. So you're wrong. But this is the thing that predates that, which is in Puebla, where a lot of, I think it's Lebanese immigrants came. They basically brought like spit roasted meats that you slice off. Mm-hmm. And this was beef that was, you know, set up like basically like beef shawarma, but then it was seasoned differently. And then you put it in between two white flour tortillas, open face. Well, not open face, but like if you were making just like a disc of tortilla meat,
like a disc of tortilla,
yeah,
covered.
And then you cut it into quarters, and then I got two quarters, and Jason got two quarters, and then there's sliced avocado on top and grilled onions.
It's like a Mexican pizza from Taco Bell.
sort of. I mean, but it was there were no beans in it. It was just the shaved meat.
Soft tortilla though?
Yeah, it was the soft flour tortilla. So and she's like, "Yeah, this is, you know, whatever it was, El Gringo, because that's apparently the way you refer to the white flour tacos. Not just an insult for people like me, but that was good. And then we went to another place where there was, you know, the street corn, which is you get two styles. You got the corn on the cob style, where there's like the crema and the seasoning and stuff. And then they also had
didn't I eat them at our first meetup when we went to lunch? Didn't I get that like everywhere because I ordered it at that restaurant that you made us go to?
Oh yeah, we went to Rosa Mexicana. I don't remember if you ordered it, but you might have.
I did. I swear, like, you took a picture of me holding it or something.
Oh, I did, because you were going to town on that.
It was
then you,
good. I like corn.
Then you were also enamored by the little pig. What's it called? The mortar pestle thing. That when they made the guacamole, but it had like a pig on the front of it.
I believe those are typically called a mocolhete, but yes. I don't remember there being a pig on it.
Yes, there was a pig on it.
Scrolling through my photos of Los Angeles, there's a picture of Austin. Oh, there's my corn. Yeah, there's my corn. My really bad haircut.
Anyway, the street corn was good, there was also corn where it's shaved off the cob and then boiled with epazote and something else.
Look at that old-ass iPhone.
And then then they give that to you in a cup. So you eat that. So we ate that while we were walking around to the next location. And we had these... I don't know. She described it as basically like, this is a place where they serve you things that are traditionally stews, but that people decided a long time ago were just better as tacos, like, or not better as tacos, something you could have as a taco too. Like they would have like basically this big clay pot full of like whatever stewed meat it was.
Or like chili verde or whatever, because those are typically pretty loose mixes for tacos. Yeah. Alexa, stop! apparently my Echo likes chili verde.
Yeah. Well, who doesn't? I mean, I like anything verde, but an interesting place because they also serve the tacos. Like, if you get two tacos, what you basically get is a plate that has, again, just like one tortilla, and then filling, and then another tortilla. And as she explained to us, you're supposed to pick the first tortilla up, then scrape off half of the meat into that tortilla and hold that like a taco, like a normal taco, like you would expect. It's not supposed to be consumed as like a giant disc.
Well, I mean, the tortilla is like a makeshift like utensil. You can grab stuff and then you can eat the utensil.
Yeah. And so we had a green mole there with pork and like these tiny little cubed potatoes, white potato in it. It was delicious. I like that. But then there was also
hungry.
There was also this other one that was with tiny bits of chicharron in it, but it was extra crispy. So I kept at one point I was just like, oh my god, would I just like bite into a piece of bone? Like what has happened? And so I like tried to spit it out casually into my napkin, and you couldn't like inspect it while she's there talking to you.
No, there's no way to do that casually either.
Yeah, and so then it wasn't until afterwards I was just like, oh, wait, was that just, like, super crunchy chicharron and I was just too afraid to, like, crack a tooth on it? Like, what was going on? But
oh, no, my dental work.
It's a very expensive dental work. But we went to a mezcal tasting, and this was a mezcal shop that was run by an artisan mezcal shop, which was run by her friend who, like, had us come in, and it was just us. Like, it was after the shop had closed. So we're just surrounded by bottles of mezcal, and there's four that he has a taste. And he's like, these are just for sipping, you know, in tiny little cups, and just pour you a little taste. And it was his.
There wasn't anybody there in a tank top and flip flops doing shots?
No. So it was very
spring break, bro.
It was very calm and very orderly. It was not a dire scenario, but the mezcal was all stuff that he had bought on trips to Oaxaca that you couldn't even buy in his shop.
I can never pronounce that right.
Oaxaca?
Oaxaca, yeah, no.
Oh.
I see the way it's spelled and my brain goes, nope.
Well, I mean, I know how to say it right now, but when I first moved to Los Angeles, I thought it was like, what's Oaxaca?
What's Oaxaca?
Yeah.
No, Alexa, stop. Jesus
No,
apparently
but
my Alexa is as hungry as I am. No, Alexa, stop. Damn it. When will I learn?
You're so bad at this. Why don't you just mute it?
I did a thing earlier today where I was talking to somebody and I looked down and my watch had transcribed like the past like two paragraphs or something. I'm like, oh my God, please don't send that to anybody. Because when I raised a Siri, I guess I just had like turned my wrist a certain way while I was talking. And I just looked down and saw this giant block of text. It's like, no, 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 no.
You're very dangerous on voice assistants. Yeah. We tried different kinds of mezcal and the guy's like, so do you guys have any experience with mezcal? And I'm like, I like it, but I've only really ever had it in cocktails. Like I've been too scared to like order a glass of it neat to sip because I have no
idea.
It also
seems a bit performative if you're going to order like a glass of mezcal neat somewhere.
Well,
you don't want to be that guy.
In Los Angeles, it does, but like literally every menu that we saw when we were there, there was like a mezcal section.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Like there, but you know, back home, like how are you going to have any experience with tasting it?
Well, mezcal is trendy right now.
I mean, I'm sure it is, mm-hmm. But like your pants aren't tight enough to order mezcal neat in Los Angeles.
He walked us through the different kinds, and so we had which was like a young version where it's like not really aged a lot, and we had like another version where it's a small batch thing that's done in like basically like a mineral still, like a clay pot still, instead of doing it in like a big copper pot still, like real old school. You know, they had slightly different flavors, but he kept asking us what we thought of the flavor profile, and I was like, it mainly tastes like alcohol, because
you can really taste the glaze of the clay pot that came off when they were aging it.
I don't think it was glazed, but it all tasted distinct, so none of them tasted the same, that's for sure. But at the same time, it wasn't like I could, it's not like wine where it's like, oh, I can identify, you know, some notes of other flavors in this and could write them down on a piece of paper like a pretentious jerk. like it's not like that. You can't be like, oh, spiced plum leather.
You didn't taste pears or apricots or anything in there?
No. But
see, this is why you need to be like me and deaden your taste buds by drinking room temperature whiskey in a glass, because that's the way you can really discern the different flavors.
Yeah, well... but that's what we were doing is drinking mezcal, sipping
room
mezcal.
Temperature mezcal in a glass.
Yeah, sipping room temperature mezcal in tiny little glasses. And so we're sipping them, and then we get to the pechuga, and he's like, "Do you know what that
is?" Insight.
And I said, "I don't, but I've seen it on the menus here. I've never seen it anywhere else." And Jason says, "Doesn't it mean chicken breast?" And he's like, "Yeah." And turns out, it is a kind of mezcal where they hang a chicken breast and then various fruits, spices, vegetables, and stuff in there during the process, and the steam that's evaporating inside the still passes through and goes through this raw chicken and fruit and whatever, and then when it recondenses and stuff, you have something that has flavor ish things from that process, but he couldn't explain why they actually used the chicken, which was the thing we were kind of most curious about. So I'm not sure why that was.
I'm going to need you to clarify this, because I briefly read the Wikipedia article that you sent to me. So basically, they hang raw chicken near where the alcohol is aging, and that imparts flavor.
Not aging. When you're distilling it.
When you're distilling it. Okay.
Yes. So there's heat, and the heat actually cooks the chicken.
Okay, so it does cook the chicken. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, you're not boiling the chicken in the liquid so or anything like that.
You're talking about those, like, the giant, well, like, I guess if you were talking about, like, a distillery in America making whiskey, it would be those giant ones that are, I don't know, 15 feet across and, like, 20 feet high.
Well, it just depends on the size batch you're making. Most of the stuff we were having was small batch because it turns out that a lot of families just kind of make their own.
So is it like let's say it's a clay pot. It's large enough that it contains liquid that is being boiled, but like they just rig like a coat hanger that hooks the chicken and then like hangs in the top opening gap of the thing where the steam escapes and then it's just like dangling down in there.
He didn't diagram it for us, but that was my understanding.
I want to know how close this raw chicken is to the material.
Well, there is no chance we're getting salmonella from the material because it's
boiled. Are you sure?
Yes, because it's boiled and the steam condenses in another container. That's how you make it. So there's no problem. And the entire process cooks the chicken completely. And Jason asked, does anybody eat the chicken afterwards? Does it taste like anything?
I imagine it tastes horrible.
Yeah, no.
It's steamed for like 10 hours.
Yeah, and they said, no. That chicken is done.
I found a photo.
You found a photo of the chicken?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pasting it in the Skype. That's apparently the URL.
Oh, wow. That was quite the URL to receive.
Yeah, for real. But yeah, it looks like a cement mixer, with a chicken hanging in it.
Yeah, and so the chicken is done, but and it gave up all of it. It's gonna give up, and you don't eat that. You just get rid of it.
This one.
I don't know why the chicken is used, but and he couldn't explain it to us. But then there's also
it's got to just be that like somebody was trying to pull double duty and like cook a chicken at the same time. They're like, you know what? There's heat over there. You know, waste not, want not, or something, but and then they stuck their chicken over there, and they're like, wow, now our mezcal tastes different.
Well, except that the chicken is useless now, so you are wasting.
Clearly this is a very large open pot. If they pull the chicken in time, it won't impart as much flavor to the mezcal as it otherwise could, but you could have a regularly cooked piece of chicken. What is this? I take that back. They're not using the A+ parts of the chicken here. That just looks like a keel bone with like a little bit of stuff left on it. fine.
Well, that's that one photo you found. Anyway, but you saw the fruit in the other photo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So apparently the fruit though that's used in this process you consume afterwards. And that makes a fruit compote, kind of a thing. And that's supposed to taste good according, to our guide.
What is that fruit in there? It kind of looks, you're right there.
Yeah. Well that one looks like apples.
Does it? Almost looks like passion fruity or something weird. What am I looking at here? Raw chicken. Oh God, it's just the description. Raw chicken hangs and puff. Oh God, this is so bad.
No, but there was also one that we tried that was just lemongrass, no chicken.
Quince, apples, bananas, pineapple, guava in the mess. I think that maybe looks like guava.
Yeah, I'm sure it was all of or any of those things because he said there's no like one set principle for it. Like you can just do whatever. And so one of the ones we tried was lemongrass, just lemongrass, no chicken. And he asked if we could taste lemongrass, and I said no. I said I can taste something herbal or floral in this, but unless you told me it was lemongrass, I would not be able to identify it. But it did taste different from the other ones that we had tried before, which had no other thing in it. And then we tried the pechuga that actually had chicken, and that doesn't taste like chicken. In case you were wondering, as we were both wondering.
I was wondering a little bit. Oh, my God. What is this?
I don't know because you haven't sent it to me. You're just saying things and being exasperated.
I'll send it to you. Don't worry, little boy. I'll send it to you.
Oh, God.
That's a pig head in a bucket.
I don't need to see a pig head in a bucket.
Wow. I found a diagram. Look at this. For the stuff. Anyway.
Yes.
So your chickeny mezcal was different, but not chickeny.
Yes, it tasted different from the other stuff. It had
did it more... taste better?
I wouldn't be able to describe it as better, but I would say it was more complex in flavor.
Mm. You are well on your way to becoming a mezcal connoisseur.
No, I'm not. But
you can go to tastings with Bri. He likes mezcal.
Yeah, I had four mezcals. I'm basically an expert now. But
yeah, exactly. You've had more than me, so you're clearly the expert in the room,
so to speak. But anyway, after that, Jason, who hates mezcal and said so at the beginning of it, to
oh really?
Yeah, because he finds it too smoky. But again, well, like me, we mainly have mezcal in cocktails.
Right.
Where they get a smoky mezcal because you want to be able to taste it when it's mixed with all the other stuff. Whereas, ideally, if you're having a mezcal that you're sipping, it's not going to be that smoky because you kind of want it to be like a scotch, kind of, in terms of, like, smokiness.
Yeah, like, here, when you order a mezcal margarita at the variety of places that have them, it's just like, here is a margarita that tastes like somebody put a cigar out in it. It's like, that's... great.
Yeah. And so that's the ideal scenario, is that it doesn't taste like that. But we didn't, of course, really know that. Just the smoke doesn't bother me as much as it bothers Jason.
I enjoy a smoky scotch as well.
Yeah. So afterwards, though, he really liked the Pechuga. And so he was like, well, can I buy a bottle of this? And he's like, well, this is my private stash that I have no bottles of that I sell in the store. But the closest thing would be this one bottle of Pechuga that I have up here. And Jason's like, okay, well, great. Here's my credit card. And so he bought that. And we found out later it was $82.
That's not that bad for a small batch bottle of anything.
No. I mean, because if you go to like BevMo or something and you get a mezcal that's like okay-ish, it's going to be $60-something.
Like,
there's cheap stuff that starts at 30, but theoretically, you don't want to like drink that. You want to mix that with something.
I'm drinking some $13 Irish whiskey right now, and it's good, you know, for its purpose, but it's not something I'm going to savor.
Yeah, and likewise, Jason has that bottle of Pechuga that he put in one of those we had the wine bags, you know, the ones that seal up and have the padding in them. So
no we
got that.
I'm unfamiliar. Is this just for traveling with alcohol?
Yes, you put it in your luggage, and it's better.
I roll it up in a pair of pants and stuff in the middle of all of my other stuff and go cross my fingers and say, hopefully when I get home my pants don't smell like Tito's and Maker's 46. Although I was coming home from Ohio, not Mexico City, so like that's why my alcohol selection was a little more lowbrow.
Yeah, well, I would highly recommend investing in these little wine bags.
Is it a jet bag?
No. I forget the technical name of them, but they're like, I think if you type in like 3M wine bag thing.
Oh, 3M.
3M makes the like sticky material thing or whatever. That it is wine skin. That's the name of it. You can buy it on Amazon. It's
wine skin.
It's basically just like a plastic envelope with padding. And the tape side of it seals. So if it's not that it has enough padding to protect it from being dropped inside of the thing.
Well, apparently there is also something named wine skin, one word, that is a tool used to make ports of Windows software for OS X.
Okay, well, that's not the one, Dan.
That's the number one hit on Google when you type in wineskin.
It's not the one. All right.
World's best bottle transport bag. I found it.
Yeah, and so the wineskin bag, you just put it in, and then you seal the thing. It's one-time use, and if it explodes in transport, then it doesn't get all over everything inside your suitcase.
Oh, interesting.
And that is the primary benefit of it. We've never had one that has suffered any damage and exploded, but the actual padding that's afforded to you by this is not enough to, like I said, prevent any damage from, like, dropping just, like, a wineskin-coated bag on the ground that still would break.
They have, by the way, they do have single-use, and they also have reusable for 2.5 times the price, so $8.
I would not really believe in them. But anyway, just have a couple wine skins around. Next time you go on a trip, you just slip them in the bag. They're flat, so they transport very easily.
Sure.
And if you find a bottle of some wine or whatever that you like.
Although I feel like this is, you know, you're doing reverse psychology on yourself. You end up traveling with wineskins, you're going to look for an excuse to buy a bottle of something.
I guess, but we've gone on trips before where we've had wineskins and we didn't use them.
See, I feel like that's you because I drink more than you do.
Okay. Well, I mean, without getting into your problems, let's...
Yeah, no, not problems. Like, we went to a place to make a bunch of hard ciders this weekend and had a good time drinking a bunch. And then we're having such a good time by the time we were leaving. It's like, you know what? Buying a growler, buying that big, tall bottle over there, and we're going to take this home. We're going to drink some more at home. And they're both still in the fridge now, but we'll get to them at some point.
Yeah. Did I tell you about the growler that I got? Three Weavers, which is a brewery that is... in Los Angeles, down by Randy's Donuts. So near
the big one that Iron Man sat in?
Yes, by the airport. Just off of 405, Manchester
airport
and whatever. Yeah, it's not a good neighborhood to like spend an enormous amount of time in.
Where I saw the wheel fall off the car. Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
I was driving to the airport going home from one of the trips, and the car next to me was like an old Jeep, and like fully the front left wheel just broke off of it while we were driving, and it started grinding to a halt next to me, and then the wheel kept rolling into oncoming traffic on the other side of the road.
Holy cow.
It's pretty great. I think it like it ran into like the Avis rent-a-car or whatever that thing is right there with the big fence around it.
Wow. Okay. Well...
That's how I would describe that neighborhood. It's the neighborhood where wheels fall off of cars. And there's a donut shop.
Well, there's a donut shop, and it's primarily known for rental cars. All of the LAX rental car companies have a location there. Nobody has an on-site thing at LAX.
There's also a lot of airport hotels, which are some of the more cost-effective places that take pets, by the way. So I've stayed in most of those when we've been driving back and forth with a dog.
Those are on Century Boulevard. That's not on Manchester.
Okay, I guess you get off and you hang a right and then you hang a left.
They're a little further apart, Dan.
It's not that far apart.
All right, well, it's close enough. Anyway, I got a growler from Three Weavers because I liked... a beer that they made that they don't sell in any of the stores in Los Angeles, that they only sell basically by the growler. And so I was like, okay, well, this is an investment in buying this $8 growler because I'll come back here and buy some more. And then I've been like, I never want to drive there because it's annoying to drive near the airport. So now I have a growler that serves a decorative purpose. Like there's just nothing to do with it.
Is it a full growler? Because the one that we got was like one of those like half growlers. It kind of looks like an old timey like medicine bottle from like the 50s or whatever.
I don't know. I would say it's sort of like a stout.
Does it have a handle on the side?
No.
Okay, so it might be the same thing. It's one of those ones that looks like it could have had hydrogen peroxide in it, like World War I or something.
Yeah, but it's all a little on the large side for like a hydrogen peroxide bottle.
Yeah, a little tall, but it's like brown glass. You have expected to say like, to help soothe your cough, this has morphine and cocaine in it or something.
No, but if only. It was the Hounslow Porter was the drink that I liked from that brewery. You can get it at Father's Office, which
is good.
Closer. And so I do on occasion partake. In that, so that I don't have to go to the airport. The thing that I got to...
Oh, I'm looking at the growler right now. Yeah, the same thing. This is the same thing that I have a growler of, like ginger lime cider.
Well, that's an interesting combo.
It's like a Moscow Mule and a cider. It's good.
Oh, that's good. I've had there's a company, Revive Kombucha, which is my preferred kombucha. Sorry, GT, you're the beginner's kombucha. But Revive has none of the gook in it floating around, and it is formulated to be delicious. There's one that has, yerba mate and lime and like a white tea base or something like that. Anyway, it tastes like just sort of citrusy, gingery deliciousness. So I like that one. Jason hates it because he hates all kombucha because he thinks they all taste sour and disgusting.
I like the sour cherry type ones.
Yeah, I mean, I like a little sourness,
just not in your bread, apparently.
As we've discussed. bread is very different from heathen. Any of the beverages.
Heathen.
So we did. We finished up this trip by going to this place, which is basically like In-N-Out for tacos, it's a taqueria that had opened in Monterey, apparently the locals in Monterey thought it was not Monterey enough, and they thought it was
Monterey, California.
No, Monterey, Mexico.
Okay, I'm just picturing people like at the aquarium in Monterey going like, "This is not what we had signed up for."
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure that happens in Monterey, but Monterey, Mexico. They opened the second location in Mexico City, and the people in Mexico City initially were not enamored by it, according to our guide. But sure enough, you get there and there's a line out the door, and it's everybody from all walks of life, locals, people from visiting wherever, mostly a lot of Americans.
What's it called?
This one was, or I think it was, hold on, let me just see if I can find it.
You need to get on Foursquare so you can check in at places.
Yeah. It was Taqueria Orinoco, which is famous enough to have a pretty substantial following, because one of Jason's coworkers happened to be in Mexico City at the same time we were, and he went there like 2 days before us. By coincidence.
This looks good.
It's
the tray of all of the sauces.
Mm-hmm. All the sauces were good.
Very hipster with all the tiles on the wall and the like fancy folding chairs.
Yes. Well, they're just red folding chairs. They're not.
Yeah, but they got a little more design to them.
Yes. Well, but it feels kind of like you're in an In-N-Out because it's all white tile and red.
Yeah.
But
white and red.
The thing that they're known for. I don't know if I can find a photo of it, one of their tacos is chicharrón norqueños, like northern style chicharrón, where it's like pork belly that's fried, so the exterior of it gets like a crispy crackling crust, but the interior is still soft, so it's not like pork skin, not like pork rind. And then you put all that inside of a taco with cheese, and then you flip it and griddle the cheese so that the cheese like blackens and melts, and it's delicious. And
I just did the same thing you did. I just looked at this and go, chicharrón taco, $30. Like, oh wait, no, that's
pizza. Yeah, it's not that much, Dad. But as our guide was explaining, for the citizens in the area, this was high priced for tacos.
Yeah, because that's it's like $3.25.
Yeah, but
wait, what's the conversion? It used to be eight something.
I don't remember.
Peso to dollar. God, this looks so good. I'm so hungry right now. Mm-hmm. $0.052 to one peso. No, I want $1. $19.15. Holy crap! When did it get that bad?
I don't know.
19.15 pesos to a dollar.
So it was pretty inexpensive for us in general.
Wow.
Most of the places were
going. This taco was $1.60.
It was real good for $1.60.
God, I would eat so many tacos.
And the al pastor is very good.
Yeah, I saw the little shawarma spit here.
Yeah.
How was the salsa? This red looks like it's got some heat to it.
The red does have heat to it. It's a smoky heat. I forget.
A little chipotle in there.
I forget all what's in it. And then
actually, it's probably adobo, not chipotle.
Yeah, and then there's one of the creamier ones has...
The creamy green, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, the creamy green has some jalapeno and some... Yeah. I forget it was... I think she said yogurt, because the white one is yogurt and cucumber, like almost like raita, like an Indian raita.
Oh, it's so good. The taco place downtown Phoenix that we haven't been in a long time that, Mr. Guy Fieri was at a long time ago that has like a salsa bar of like 30 different salsas, has basically all of this stuff. They've got, weird ones that are like pecan ones and stuff too, but they've got the creamy green one that's real spicy with the little jalapeno and a couple different red ones that are real tasty. God, I'm so hungry for tacos. I'm not even hungry, but I want tacos right now.
Well, it was all very good. That unfortunately the next day Jason was horribly ill.
Oh, from this place? Were you able to narrow it down?
No, because we went to these four places as well as our place that we had breakfast at. So it could have been like literally anything. Also, it could have been any beverage.
Was this the same night as the street taco tour?
He felt ill after the street taco.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
And I felt fine, and then I felt worse again after we got back. So
what kind of taco? Do you remember what kind of tacos you were provided from the street taco tour?
All of them?
Well, I mean, were you eating a tongue and that sort of thing?
No, 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 no. I specifically said when we started, no tongue. no tongue, no head cheese, no tripe.
Well, I mean, no tripe, because that's just, I mean, even if it tastes fine, just the look of it. But
it's very popular, and our guide said, you know, I understand that you don't like it, but it's one of my favorite things. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Head cheese is almost like indiscernible from the look of it, so you just eat it and you're like, that tastes meaty.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, it's very strange because I'll be like, sure, sausage, fine, let's go for it. It really has to do with, like, I don't know, something about the coarse texture of certain things, like, yeah. I can and not get past. But
you're like, this doesn't taste like pork butt.
tastes like butt. But and I missed one of the taquerias that we went to before we went to the mezcal tasting, which was just a roadside thing where the guy has like a cart and a big tree stump, basically. It was like a 4-inch.
Like all the people in Hawaii who just kind of like park a car on the side of the road and they're like, this is my shop now.
Yeah. Well, there were literally taco stands on the side of the road everywhere. Some had more permanence than others. You know, there were like famous ones that would be open on like Wednesdays and Sundays or whatever. Like people just had like a whole system for, the little side stands, and they all had like a specialty that they would do. And so this one that we went to, there was two guys, an old guy who had a pan, and then there was a guy who was like helping him like do stuff and like chop up things and stuff that came out of her. And it was like marinated flank steak and chorizo. And you could order one or the other or a mix. And the way that the flank steak was cooked is in the chorizo fat in the special pan where it's like kind of like an oil drum sort of, where there's it was a convex, so that the top of it is round, the high part of the hill basically, and then it runs down the sides.
Oh, so it's an upside down wok.
Yes, and so that way all the grease from the chorizo would run down the sides, and you'd basically have this rim of grease that the meat would cook in, and then you'd heat the tortillas in the center of the like the flat part where you wouldn't want to like deep fry them, but there would be like fat there from that.
I mean, I would want to deep fry them.
Well, that'd be slightly different. But anyway, that, and then they would take the meat out and they'd put it on like this tree stump chopping block and then go to town. So anyway, any of these places that we went to, or any of the things that we consumed prior to that, or any beverages that we had, because we also went to a bar that one of Jason's coworkers had recommended, called La Calandestina, which our tour guide told us used to be better. So she doesn't even like it, which is fun. But that was all mezcal and also cocktails, and so we chickened out and just had cocktails.
Do your cocktails include ice?
Yes.
Yeah, so you got to watch out for that.
Yeah. I may have made a boo-boo.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing, though, is like a lot of places have ice that they get on trucks that is brought in, and it's supposed to be like fine.
Yeah, but how are you going to vet that?
I don't. So maybe is what I'm saying. But anyway, you just kind of have to go with the flow, I guess.
What do you mean go with the flow? You drink room temperature whiskey in a glass. That's how you get past it.
All right.
Not only do you avoid the ice, that you also kind of like use it as an antiseptic on your throat.
Yeah. Well, theoretically, the alcohol that was in it should have killed anything. But so anyway, we probably not. But that was our experience, and then the day we were checking out, Jason felt too ill to do anything, so we just sat around the hotel basically all day. And we went to one coffee shop, which is in a neat Art Deco building, which looked so cool and amazing. Like the wrought iron, you know how in kind of
what's it called?
What?
The coffee shop. What's it called? I'm going to Google it.
Praga 29, Praga 29. You know how in kind of not great neighborhoods, people will have iron bars on the windows?
Like West Adams?
Well, even here.
All of Los Angeles, yeah.
Yeah, like literally on my street in Beverly Hills, there are houses where there are iron bars.
Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, but you know how they're usually just like straight lines and then like a little crappy done at the factory, same as everybody else, filigree or whatever on the outside.
Yeah, they're all done very hasty because people just like want to protect their windows from getting smashed for the eighth time.
Yeah, so these ones though are like artistically crafted things, like just like beautiful works of art. You'd be like, wow, what stunning work went into the shaping of the metal to do this, like these interesting geometric symmetrical patterns that run through this thing. I don't know how great it is at protecting windows, but it looks good. And then they even had stained glass windows, so it must be pretty good.
Oh, look at that.
And it was such a cool shop to go into.
It looks like they stole the wainscoting inside from like a church that went out of business or something.
Well, see, our theory was, it turns out that a lot of these older homes, these Art Nouveau and Art Deco homes that were built in the earlier part of the 20th century, they are not super great with earthquakes or because of the soft soil. It's also not great when new buildings are built next to them that are large and heavy and stuff, because then it also ruins the foundation of the house.
Yeah.
And they do have earthquakes from time to time in Mexico City. So some of these are damaged, and there were a couple of them that we walked in where it's just like, wow, this floor is really slanted. But because they're so expensive but also have historical value, they're too expensive for a lot of people to buy as like homes for the land. And people also don't want to see them torn down and turned into like high rises. So what that happens is they turn into coffee shops or restaurants or shops for like your trendy hipster clothing and stuff. So this was a case where it turned into a coffee shop, but there were many other buildings like this where.
So this is clearly a home. I just got to the photo of this bathroom. Did you go in this bathroom?
I did not.
It's a like there's a bathtub, like it's green tile. It's very. I'll send you this image here. It looks like a regular, like super cool Art Deco bathroom with like an old school sink and stuff. But they just put like plants in the bathtub because who's going to be taking a bath at a coffee shop?
Yeah, I don't really want to invite that.
This is super cool looking, but yeah, this definitely looks like somebody's home.
Yeah, well, that was my theory, is that it was. But
I think that's a safe theory.
It makes for a good coffee shop. Like there's just a lot of really beautiful old architecture like that in that neighborhood. From that era. Of course, that was also the era that there was like a Mexican dictatorship. And then there was the whole crisis front. He didn't really have like a secession plan. And then they had the fighting and things. It wasn't great, but beautiful buildings. it was
beautiful pine furniture.
It really is amazing the craftsmanship in some of the buildings is just phenomenal. And a lot of shops you go in, there's a lot of really interesting artsy stuff, and there's a lot of stuff with, the hipsters where they're doing their artsy BS like they would be in Abbot Kenny or Venice or anywhere else.
Yeah, talk about hipster. This Praga 29 on Yelp, it looks like you get a little French onion soup, like crock, but it has guac in it with some tomatoes on it. I don't know what's underneath the guac, but it just looks like a bowl full of guac.
I did not see that on the menu, but
it's not avocado toast because bread is bad for you now. So it's just, you know, avocado in a bowl.
I also went to a Pandaria that has a couple locations, which was also kind of famous. The the chef, the lady that owns it, does all this artisan stuff. And we had these pastries that were, they didn't have the one we wanted, which was the guayaba queso, which is always a favorite of mine, because if you go to any Cuban bakery, they're always going to have guava and cheese pastelitos. What are you giggling about?
I just your love of Cuban food amuses me.
It's good. It's good food, Dan.
It's good food, but you're so Florida.
All right, well, whatever.
Have you been to Cuba? You should go to Cuba.
I don't know if I'm equipped.
I'll go to Cuba with you.
Is that a threat?
It's a threat. We'll make a group tour out of it. It'll be fun.
Oh, Dan,
you can find the food, and then you can validate the authenticity of the food, and then I'll protect you from the people.
I think that I want to like give it a minute before I do anything adventurous like that.
To be honest with you, I was worried that they were going to close the border while you were in Mexico.
I would not want to surprise you by letting you know that I also had that concern, especially when our president.
Really, were you in your Apple News from day to day, going like, I wonder if we're going to be able to go home this time or not?
Yeah, I was reading news items about Fox News saying the three Mexicos cutting off aid to the three Mexicos, and yeah. I was just like, wow,
you're like we're probably in one of those Mexicos that's going to get cut off.
Yeah, and the president saying he was going to cut the border, and that was on BBC International, which we were watching the hotel, and I was like, don't do that. Don't do that, you pompous airbag.
Luckily most of that got diverted, because apparently wind turbines cause cancer.
Oh god.
Anyway, so Mexico.
So anyway.
It was a good trip though? You liked it?
Yes. I did like it.
Rank in comparison to other international trips, and I guess in comparison to the other trip you took to Mexico. You've been there one other time, right?
Twice. Two other times is what I meant to say. So this is my third time. But previously, we went to the first time I went was to Cabo, not to any of the party destinations, but to just the Hilton.
Of course.
The Hilton resort that's there. And we basically just did everything that's on resort property. One time we took a car into, I think it was Cabo San Lucas, because you're actually in between two cities on that, where the resorts are in that stretch. And that was not fantastic. The city is not in great shape. But you don't really see that because you have the illusion of the resort provided to you by Hilton. But I felt kind of weird about that experience. And then afterwards, we went to Jason has had a friend that was getting married in Cancun, and they were doing it in an all-inclusive resort, because the trick is they give you a wedding for free because you are bringing so many people to the resort who are all paying their own way. So we had to stay at the resort. There was no option, because if you don't stay at the resort, you have to pay them money to basically host the wedding event venue. And so it wouldn't have been financially worth it to do that and to arrange travel to and from a different hotel. So we stayed there, and that was also not a great experience, because you mainly had just people who were in it to have as much cheap booze as they could have, which was gross and weird. And we did go to Tulum, though. We rented a car and did that, and so that was a little cultural experience, something, you know, outside. But that's also not like it's not like the city. So this was like the big city Mexico experience that, this is the first time I was having. There was no resort. There was no thing like that. We did stay at a nice hotel, but it wasn't like we were inside like a thing that was removed from the rest of the city. You literally walk outside your door and you were just there.
Hmm. Yeah. The way it should be.
Yeah. And so in certain ways, it felt like visiting a large European city like Paris or Rome. I would say more Rome-ish than Paris-ish. Just in terms of, you got historic things, you got up-and-coming neighborhoods that are like not so great right now, but used to be good.
things, a sheer volume of people and or potentially tourists.
Yeah, and it's all in flux all around you. So if anything, it's overwhelming because of the size of the city, because there's another thing that you don't anticipate, which is just like the enormity of it. Like we saw like the tiniest fraction of Mexico City.
It's not a particularly tall city, is it?
No, but it's spread out in all directions. It is enormous. Like you fly over that thing.
It's like Phoenix.
Well, it's bigger than Los Angeles.
Well, I just mean in the sense that we have like three buildings that are over like 10 stories downtown, and the rest are all just very low.
Yeah. Well,
and wide.
It was weird because every now and then you would see skyscrapers, but for the most part, everything was basically like topped out at five stories. A lot of it was older construction. But we went to Polanco, which was the like the Beverly Hills of Mexico City.
Of course you did.
Yeah. And that was a different experience too, because then you're seeing like this really like gilded kind of protected area for the elite, basically, which had a very different feel than everywhere else. And a lot of places that we would go to would also just have private security guards who were standing around with guns in the doors. So that was a different experience than what I am used to. But there are many ways in which it is very like America, where all the outlets are the same, which is a thing that I'm very happy about, because I can't tell you what a relief it is not to pack a travel charger and have to cram everything onto one little like wall wart thing that might overheat and then cause a fire and then worry about that. A lot of the, it felt like, you know, even though there's a language barrier, there's just like sort of a customary like society kind of a thing that's like very similar to America in terms of like, you know, you get your middle class with cars and they're driving to and fro to go to jobs, and everybody's just doing their thing, just like
just chill vibes everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, people were busy, but like nothing was. It wasn't like New York, where everybody's just like too busy and a butthole.
And it didn't feel like one of those towns that was like crippled by tourism, where now everything, like the only economy that survived there is tourism.
No, but it did. Like I said earlier, when we went to like the real fancy frou-frou restaurants that everybody knew about, because those are the ones that attract the tourists, and you see very few locals in those establishments. And so that made you feel like, well, what was the point of coming here if I'm just going to be surrounded by Americans? Which is an experience that I also had in Paris, where we would go to these fancy French restaurants that Jason would have read up about, and you know, seen on Instagram or whatever. And so we go to the fancy place and we get seated and we hear the conversations of the people around us, are just like, oh, these are literally all just Americans who flew in from New York, who are here for like the weekend. Like it is a very surreal experience, because then you don't feel like you're experiencing something international. Then you just feel like your expectations are being catered to by another person in another nation.
Yeah, like, though we had that in Rome. The place we went to for our anniversary was, it looked basically like a Buca di Beppo inside. The food was still very good and very Italian, but it was full of Americans. And the guy who was sitting next to us was from San Francisco, and he was like, he worked in a startup, and we talked to him for a while. I was like, oh, this is weird, but we're in Italy, apparently.
Yeah, but the nice thing was, whenever you would go to just like your everyday places, then you would see either more of a mix of people or predominantly local people. And it just would feel like you were actually traveling somewhere else. It didn't feel like just some tourist thing for Americans.
But it doesn't sound like it's particularly walkable, or was it?
Well, it is if you're staying in an area where there are a lot of stuff you want to do is around you. So we were in Juarez, and there was Condesa and Roma Norte and Roma Sur, and that was all like local to us. And then there was like a 20 to 30, depending on traffic, cab ride to the old center of Mexico City, you know, like where the Zocalo is, the big plaza with the old cathedral and all that, and the Templo Mayor, the old temple that they uncovered when they were digging around. All that stuff. So it was pretty accessible from where we were. And the thing that we did that was the furthest away was when we went to Frida's Museum in Coyoacan. And that was like a 30 to 40 minute Uber ride for that. And that was not a big deal. The airport also not fantastic to get to, but it's very much like LAX. If you can deal with LAX, you could deal with it. Kind of Charles de Gaulle-ish in that way.
LAX ain't that bad.
Oh, it's really bad. When we flew in, back here, back to this scorched, pocked, garbage hellhole of a place, we came in at night.
Back into frantic oblivion. It's from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Oh, I was going to say, it sounded like you were riffing on Eve 6, but
No, it's what he refers to LA as.
So the plane lands, we taxi into Terminal 2, which is Delta and Aeromexico, and we disembark, but the border control is closed there, so we need to go to Tom Bradley on a bus. Why we didn't land at Tom Bradley? I don't know.
What's Tom Bradley?
An enormous terminal that if you were to go... you know how LAX is basically like a big oblong ellipse of pain, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You start at Terminal 1, and then you get 2, 3, and then Tom Bradley, and then you get 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 on the other side.
Yes.
Why they're laid out like that, I could not tell you. But I'm sure there are very good historic reasons for arranging this place like complete butt. And there's that ring of pain that goes around the entire thing where you can barely move in your car and you hope to God that you can cut through one of the things so you don't need to go by Tom Bradley, because that's the biggest traffic jam part of it.
Yeah. I was going to say, you ever accidentally like gone to like Terminal 2 and realized that your plane has been moved to like Terminal 8 or whatever and have to like walk over there?
No, I've never had that experience, but that wouldn't happen the way they do it now because the airlines are all fragmented into different terminals. So worst...
You never get the ones where it's like you booked a flight through United, but it's being serviced through American. So it's like you're in the wrong terminal now.
I've never had that experience, but... like Delta and Aeromexico are partners for stuff. So they do stuff.
There was a couple of years where United was just like, yeah, we don't have enough planes, so go to the other terminal because American.
Interesting.
It's not fun. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, anyway, United took over 6, 7, and 8. And I think Alaska Air still has some stuff in 6. And 4 is American, but 2 and 3 are Delta. There is no connection between them. Sometimes you need to check in at 1 and check your bags at 1 and then go to the other one. And other times you don't. And then sometimes you'll find out your gate was moved and you need to take a bus because it is
not
good.
It's like a Heathrow where you're just like, we're going to be on a bus for 20 minutes now and drive who the hell knows where, and then your plane is over there somewhere.
Well, it's not. It's 2 and 3 are not that far apart. It's just annoying to do the bus shenanigans. But the problem with doing the bus from 2 to Tom Bradley is that you go from one side of the side of 2 that faces Terminal 1, around 2, around 3, around the entire perimeter of Tom Bradley to the other side that's by Terminal 4, and then you squeeze in there, and then you get dumped out of this bus you've been crammed into like sardines after your 10-minute bus ride, and then you go running through there like cattle to get to the border patrol thing. But they had closed all of the stuff for U.S. citizens and foreign citizens, and they were only processing them both together, which made for one enormous blob of a line. But I have global entry, and Jason has global entry. So,
is that the one with the kiosk, or is that Clear, or is that different?
No, it has a kiosk, but Clear is also, it's a I think Clear is just domestic, but and that's the thing where somebody was like, "You pay us a lot of money, and we'll take you to your plane for you," because we're jerks.
I thought it was just like they have kiosks everywhere. I've seen that.
Yeah, well, they have kiosks for the, but it's on the other side. It has nothing to do with the border control part of it. But so anyway, we have global entry. It was one of the benefits of the credit card that we had. Otherwise, I wouldn't have signed up for the thing. But Jason's like, no, you need to do it. So whatever, I did it.
Tell me what credit card that is.
but he had done it before me. So we didn't realize until we got into the global entry line. It wasn't really like a global entry line, because it turns out that the guy was just shouting like, everybody needs to go over there. And he's standing in front of the global entry thing. So we were all thinking that global entry was closed. And then the lady's like, oh yeah, no, the global entry is closed. So then we turn back around and we go to the guy and we're like, we need to go to global entry. He's like, oh, you do? It's like, yes. Why are you telling everybody not to do that? Anyway, so we go to use the little kiosk things. And then Jason finds out that he needs to go see an agent because his global entry expired on the 27th of April. And he did not know that because it turns out CBP doesn't email you or notify you in any way, or at least not in any way that registered with him. He claims he received nothing. So he was not only kicked out of the process, but also flagged in the system. So he couldn't use the check-in process by the mobile app either, because which is another alternative that they offer you now. It's like you can download the CBP app on your phone on the Wi-Fi that they provide you and fill out the questionnaire ahead of time. Not a lot of people seem to do that, though. I haven't done that before, but Jason had tried to do that, but because his global entry had failed, he didn't qualify to do that. So I got through. I got through global entry, and then I waited for half an hour for him and baggage. And my phone was dying, so I couldn't use it. So I was just pacing in the linoleum room, and it had gone for so long that the baggage handler guys were dumping all of the bags off of the little rolly go round thing, so that the next flight could start going through. And so only like 8 people had gone through to pick up their bags. There was just this enormous like line of checked bags that just was accumulated next to it. I was like, this is such a stupid system. Jason showed up, we go through the thing, and get a taxi. And it was the craziest Prius driver I've ever had in my life. Just like gassing it, like just slammed on it, like lead foot slammed on it. And we're just like whipped back into our seats by this process. Anyway, we finally get home from this whole experience, and, it's midnight, and I feel terrible. And I was the one who was feeling better. And then he starts feeling better now that we're back. We go to bed. Sure enough, the next morning, he feels fine and I feel terrible. And I'm like, ah, cruel fate.
Yeah. I know it doesn't do anything, but I always eat a bunch of Airbornes after I like do something like that around lots of gross people.
Yeah, no, I had zinc. I
don't do the zinc. I just eat like 3 Airbornes.
I believe in zinc.
I know you believe in zinc.
Yeah, but and it seemed to make things better. I had zinc, Sudafed, and then we weren't sure if it was allergies, so I also had one Zyrtec.
Oh God, my allergies have been horrible the past like 2 weeks. Just like going outside and I sneeze like 30 times in a row and I just want to kill myself. It's so bad.
Yeah, well, it's fantastic. So anyway, it was a lovely experience, but that concludes our discussion of Mexico City and
global entry. $100 for 5 years versus TSA pre-check, which is 85, and global entry also includes TSA pre-check, so I want this now.
Yes, well, see, that was the reason. Is the credit card that we signed up for includes either global entry, Nexus, or TSA PreCheck. And it's like, well, let me do the math on that one. Which one of these do I want? Which one of these includes the others? And so you do the global entry. But you have to do the dumb interview thing. And
yeah, we had to do that for PreCheck too.
Yeah, I told you that they flagged me because I had been to Slovenia already. And he's like, why'd you go to Slovenia? And I was like, because I have a friend there.
Because
how did you get this friend?
The internet.
Yeah. And so I was like, I didn't want to say.
He recruited me when I was very, I mean, we met through podcasts.
Yeah. I didn't want to be like, yeah, I use a podcast and it's a really cool podcast. And it's about movies. And I.
Well, he's very tall and he has a very deep voice.
He's a Slovenian basketball player who does podcasts and is friends with a late night talk show host in Slovenia. He's huge in Slovenia. But anyway.
Is that guy always wearing suits that he's hanging out with?
Yes, Godler. But
he's a talk show host?
I think so. I thought that's what Andre said. But anyway, we had to do this whole thing of like, yeah, blah, 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 blah. I went to Slovenia, and he's like, well, there's a lot of Russian money moving through Slovenia. And I was like, okay.
They got some cool bridges, too.
I was like, I had nothing to do with anything like that. Nothing suspicious happened here. He's like, did anybody coerce you into getting this? And I wanted to be like, well, Jason made me do it. But I feel like that was the time or the place.
Don't joke with those people. Just be like, you know what? I was there for the bridges and the large plates of meat. It was fine.
Yeah, he didn't seem to have much of a sense of humor. But I got the thing. But it was really super unclear from the way the conversation ended at the end of my interview whether or not I got it. Because he just seemed to be so angry with me for no particular reason. And it was early in the morning, so it wasn't like he had like five other, you know, jerks or anything. It was like probably one of the first people he talked to. And it was just like, I guess you're not a morning.
He just takes his job very seriously.
Very seriously. But so anyway, I have that thing, but Jason's is expired. And so he had to go through the renewal process. But because his like lapsed, he has to actually go through the interview process again from scratch, like as if he was applying for the first time. Yeah. And so I was like, well, isn't that going to screw up all your travel stuff because you're not going to have TSA pre because your global entry expired? And he's like, I don't actually know what's going to happen now. So he's arranging all that stuff. But it was a heck of a thing to find out. Make sure you check that kind of thing before you go traveling.
Yeah, I feel like it's I got a couple more years on my pre-check, but I probably don't. Probably expires soon.
Not why. Well, I certainly checked mine afterwards, but mine doesn't expire until 2023, so I should be fine. That concludes our conversation, I think.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. This is a long conversation.
Well, that's why I'm concluding it. This is why, yeah. Bringing the hammer down. Good night, folks.
Sure.
That's all, folks.